Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to G'day World 370, the Vanini Day edition. Happy Vanini Day, everybody. If you don't know what Vanini Day is, it's the new celebration that I invented to replace Easter for atheists. My name's Cameron Riley. You're listening to G'day World on the podcast network, by the way. Vanini Day is to celebrate the first modern atheist, Lucilio Vanini. In November 1618, Vanini was arrested on charges of being an atheist. After a prolonged trial, he was condemned to have his tongue cut out, to be strangled at the stake, his body to be afterwards burned to ashes. The sentence was executed on the 9th of February, 1619. So I think he was a very brave atheist, the first modern atheist. And at this time of year, I think all atheists should remember Vanini Day. Remember Lucilio Vanini. I'm not exactly sure how we should do that, whether we should have a little party, raise a glass, wear Vanini T-shirts, talk to our children about the brave atheists who paved the way in centuries gone past, when it was a death sentence to say that God didn't exist, or perhaps that Jesus didn't exist. And they paved the way for people like us today, who can have the freedom in some countries to make such scandalous claims as that gods or Jesus, miracle men, didn't exist. And that's exactly what I'm doing on the show today, funnily enough. My guest on the show today is Dr. Greg Clark, PhD, Honorary Associate, Department of Ancient History at Macquarie University, and a director at the Center for Public Christianity, www.publicchristianity.org. Greg was kind enough to agree to come on the show today to discuss a survey that the Center for Public Christianity recently sponsored in Australia, to determine what people knew about Jesus, what they understood about Jesus's teachings, whether or not they believed Jesus was resurrected from the dead, whether or not he even existed, which came up with some interesting results, which I'll let Greg tell you about on the show. I actually invited John Dixon, who's also a director of the Center for Public Christianity, on the show. John, as you may recall, has been on G'day World before. If you haven't listened to that episode, I'll put a link to it in the show notes for this episode. John was actually the first ancient historian slash biblical scholar that I ever interviewed on G'day World about the historicity of Jesus. And since then, I've had Robert M. Price on, I've had Ben Witherington III on, and I hope to have more. Anyway, so John was unavailable. He had other commitments, but Greg was kind enough to come on and have a chat to me for 20, 25 minutes about this survey. And then we delved into some of my doubts on the historicity of Jesus. And I tried to present to Greg the data as I understand it to be, and he didn't like that. What I was trying to do, and you'll hear this in the show, is just see whether or not, first of all, we agree upon the facts in case I'm wrong. I get in debates with Christians on blogs at sometimes, and they like to challenge the facts that I put forward, even though I'm pretty sure that they're agreed upon by the majority of biblical scholars and historians. But, it's always worth checking. Now, the interpretation of those facts, I'm fully aware, can be different from person to person, but I just wanted to make sure the facts were right. Anyway, you'll see what happened in my upcoming interview with Dr. Greg Clark.
Oh my God, you're like listening to G'day World with Cameron Riley on the podcast network. Whatever.
Cameron, g'day, it's Greg Clark.
How did you know it was me, Greg?
I was told by my secretary that it would be you.
Wasn't Jesus who told you? He didn't whisper in your ear, it's Cameron on the phone.
If only.
Thanks for chatting, mate. How long have you got? I think you've got a 1 o'clock.
That's about right. So let's chat away. I'm very happy to give you 20 minutes or so.
Good, thanks. Appreciate it. Why don't you introduce yourself first of all? Name, rank, serial number?
It's Greg Clark from the Center for Public Christianity.
Excellent. And you also do some stuff with Macquarie University in the Department of Ancient History?
Yeah, I co-teach a course there in the ancient history department. My area of interest is on the influence of the Bible in the Western literary tradition.
Oh, fascinating. Well, yeah. That'd be fascinating to learn more about. We should get you on a show again at some stage and talk about that in some detail.
Sure, happy to.
So obviously we want to talk about the survey that was commissioned by the Centre for Public Christianity, the results of which were released this week. I've been reading through your press release. And it says there's some interesting numbers in here. 11% of Australians, I think the sample was 2,500 Australians, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And 11% doubt that Jesus was a real historical figure. 42% believe he had divine powers, but there was 55% don't believe that he rose from the dead.
Well, the stunning, these figures came out entirely differently to what we might have guessed, by the way. It's one of those.
What would you have predicted?
We would have thought that the vast majority of Australians had no longer had any belief in Jesus rising from the dead at Easter time. They might have had some vague understanding of what Jesus taught, and many, many of them would have been very skeptical about whether the Jesus accounts of Jesus that we have are historically reliable. So we actually expected people to be far more skeptical than they are, because as you've said, only 11% of Australians doubt that Jesus was a real historical figure. Some would say that's still too high, but it's a low number. And 42% of people who are not themselves, don't identify themselves as born-again Christians, 42% of them still believe that Jesus was a real historical figure with divine powers. So that really stunned us, that even though these people wouldn't necessarily call themselves hardcore Christians, they still believe that Jesus somehow was special.
And we should put this in perspective. So this wasn't just a survey of Christians. This was a straight sampling of the community.
Straightforward representative sampling model by McCrindle Research here in Sydney. We took out the people who said that they were born-agains so that we could have a sample that was of people who didn't give them that kind of hardcore commitment to Christianity. It's really fascinating stuff.
And according to the most recent census figures that I've seen, about 64% of Australians call themselves Christian. About 18.7% said they belong to no religion. So for 45% to say that they believe that Jesus did have mystical powers is a big number when you take those figures into account. Although that means that like 20% potentially, not 20%, a third of Christians don't believe Jesus rose from the dead.
I don't think you can necessarily draw that conclusion from the data because we didn't line up that way. But you can say that there are quite a lot of people who don't call themselves born-again Christians who do believe that Jesus rose from the dead. From that, I get the idea that actually people are far more supernatural in their belief system than you would necessarily think these days if you just listen to the Richard Dawkins and the mainstream media who are always saying that people... that belief rates in God are dying off.
Yeah, I know that you've also said publicly that, this may have come out in the survey, that knowledge of the Bible is quite low in Australia.
Well, we are of the view that biblical literacy is very, very low, and we're still of that view. But one of the interesting outcomes of this survey is that people are actually more familiar with Jesus's words than we would have expected. So we did, one of the questions in the survey asked people to identify a saying as from Jesus or not from Jesus. And the vast majority of people got the answer right. So most people know things like Jesus taught that you should do unto others as you want to have done to you. 83.9% of people knew that Jesus taught that. On the other side, only 22% of people thought that Jesus said God helps those who help themselves, which he certainly didn't say, at least not in the records that we've got. So, people really know what Jesus said and what he didn't say. And that surprised us. We thought it would be harder for people to identify the words of Jesus now than it actually is. So either they're picking it up from movies or they're reading their Bibles or there's still a kind of residual knowledge in the population of the sorts of things Jesus said, or even the vibe of Jesus' teaching. And that really surprised us.
Well, I'm surprised that surprised you. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. These things are, particularly a saying like that as being one of the things that Jesus possibly said is fairly prevalent through our society, I would think.
Well, it obviously is. I mean, you obviously knew the population better than I did on that one, because I had a feeling that the specific teachings of Jesus had drifted away a bit and people weren't so sure of what he said. But, I mean, the top rating saying was that 93% of Australians knew came from Jesus was, "I have come that you may have life." And I wonder if that means, I mean, I don't think people are necessarily reading that from the Gospel of John, which is where it comes from, but it means that Jesus is very positively associated with life, that that people think of Jesus as pro-life, as not pro-life in the political sense, but, you know, he's on the side of life. And that's, I'm really pleased with that. That's a great outcome.
One of the quotes that I saw in the media, I think it was from the ABC, was from the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, Peter Jensen. He says, because there were talks about how some people obviously believe that Jesus rising again was a metaphor and not literal. He says, if he just rose metaphorically, well, it's Alice in Wonderland sort of stuff and it's not worth worrying about. I wouldn't be a Christian if I thought that. Just wouldn't be worth the trouble. What do you think he meant by that?
I'm of the same view as the Archbishop on that one. I think if Jesus didn't actually rise from the dead, that the Christian faith is just wishful thinking. But we're not on our own there. That's actually from the Apostle Paul in the letter to the Corinthian church, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where he says, you know, if Jesus wasn't raised, the Christians should be pitied, because our whole faith is based around the idea that Jesus died for sins and was raised to new life to show that eternal life is available. So I'm of the same view.
So if you didn't believe Jesus rose from the dead, what would you be?
I guess I'd probably be a theist still. I'd believe there was God, and I'd be very, very impressed with Jesus still, because I think he was such a great, wonderful teacher, a miraculous figure. And
But you wouldn't consider yourself a Christian?
Well, I wouldn't have a hope of eternal life, because the resurrection of Jesus is the basis for the hope of eternal life. It's the reason we know Jesus' death on the cross was effective as a payment for sin. It's the beginning of what we would consider and what the Bible calls the new creation, when God is changing the world and aligning the world with the way it should be, having dealt with sin on the cross. So it's where hope rests for Christians. Well, resurrection's all about hope.
Let's talk about the evidence for the historicity of Jesus for a few minutes. I've
sure.
interviewed quite a few biblical scholars and historians over the years, including your colleague John Dixon and Ben Witherington, a number of American scholars.
Good names.
My understanding is that there is some doubt, and there's certainly a great deal of doubt in my mind, that we have any hard evidence that Jesus existed at all, let alone what he said and did. Well, I just want to take you through quickly and ask you, you know, your view on a couple of things and see where we disagree.
Sure. So you're among the 11%.
I am. Yeah. Well, I am. I don't know. I'd say I'm in the 11%. I wouldn't say that he definitely did exist. I would say that I don't really see any evidence either way. And here's why. My understanding is that of the four Gospels, that the canonical Gospels, none of them can really be classified as first-hand eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. Would you agree or disagree?
I think you're probably sort of answering your question the way you're asking it there, because when you look at the way that the history is done, there was an oral tradition. The storytelling of Jesus' life by his early followers, which was eventually written down, and that's a fairly normal thing that happens in the ancient world. So what we do have actually is records of the written evidence of Jesus, his reputation, what he did, what he said, and that people worshipped him.
We have stories that were passed on and were eventually written down, but you would agree though that the Gospels themselves aren't, you know, direct eyewitness accounts. And I think this is important, because most people I speak to about this, Christian and non-Christian alike, seem to think that Matthew, Mark, Luke and John were actually written by four guys, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, who actually saw Jesus do these things. That's kind of this one of these memes that people seem to have picked up somewhere along the line. But my understanding is that the majority of historians don't think that's true.
No, but the majority, in fact, all historians think that Jesus was a real historical figure. So you're asking, 100%. I think, the wrong question.
Okay,
well, John tells me, my colleague John, who is an ancient historian, that he has asked specifically, has asked around to find out if there is any ancient historian who doubts Jesus' existence.
Well, there's Robert M. Price, for a start.
An ancient historian?
Yeah.
Or a philosopher?
No, he's a biblical historian, I believe.
Right.
He and Ben Witherington are, you know, colleagues. They studied together, went to the same seminary, I think, but have ended up on different sides of the coin. But let me.
Yeah,
okay,
my understanding is no one who's working in mainstream ancient history in universities around the world thinks there is any reason to doubt the historical presence of Jesus.
Okay, but let's
run the data is just too good. The data is way better than anything else.
Well, let's look at the data. We don't have a direct eyewitness account written by an eyewitness. You agree?
What we have is evidence of the written accounts from within 30 years of Jesus' life, which is, in ancient history, really as good as it gets, as John says in our documentary we've just put out on the life of Jesus.
By the way,
I just looked up Robert Price on the web while we were talking, and he's a professor of theology, but not an ancient historian.
Well, he's a biblical scholar.
Yeah, but he's not an ancient historian. So what we've done is looked around at people who are not committed theologically to ask if any of them think that Jesus didn't exist, and none of them do.
Okay,
there's no doubting that Jesus was a real historical figure.
Well, there is in my mind. Let's.
Well, you can doubt. That's right. But among historians in working in universities, there's no doubt.
Well, let's look at the evidence, and we can talk about it later. There's not a single eyewitness account, direct eyewitness account.
But why are you making that your one thing that will tell you whether or not there's a historical Jesus? Because normal methods of history tell people that Jesus really did exist. Yeah. They rely on Matthew, Mark, Luke and John as their actual sources for Jesus because they're the best sources we have. Right. Even if they have no religious beliefs themselves, that's what they base it on.
I just want to make sure we agree on the facts here, Greg. You agree, though, that we don't have a direct eyewitness account?
Only in the way you're describing it, and I think you're giving it the wrong kind of value.
Well, no, there's only one. We either have direct eyewitness accounts or we don't. Somebody who saw him.
If you're only going to trust things that are told to you by someone who saw it, then you won't believe it.
We're just trying to agree on the facts here. We agree that there are no direct eyewitness accounts. There are also no contemporary accounts written during his lifetime, Christian or non-Christian, Jewish, Roman. Would you agree?
I would say that there is creedal evidence of the beliefs about Jesus that rose up within years of his time.
Yes or no will be fine.
In 1 Corinthians. But I think you're not really dealing with the question here, mate.
Yeah. No, I'm trying.
You're avoiding. You've already answered it, and you're not actually dealing with the data.
You're answering it. I'm trying to figure out what the data is. Do we have direct eyewitness accounts? No. Do we have contemporary accounts? No. Are the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, written anonymously?
I think you might tell me, because I think you've already answered these questions in your own mind.
I know the answers. I'm just trying to make sure that we agree on the answers, unless...
Better if we had a discussion about the actual history of it rather than the kind of line of arguing that you've worked out.
Greg, this is the history. This is the data, as you keep saying. And because, you know, I have respect for you. You work in the Department of Ancient History. I'm not an ancient historian. You obviously are. So I just want to make sure that my understanding of the data here is correct.
But you're saying what we don't have, you're not looking at what we do have.
Well, we can get to what we do have. I'm first of all making sure that we understand the facts. Because, again, people don't know this kind of stuff, and I think it's important that they do understand it.
So I agree. It's really important people work out the history. That's why we made a documentary on it.
I'll tell you the evidence as I understand it. You correct me as soon as you think I'm wrong. So there's no direct eyewitness accounts.
That's not evidence. That's a comment you've made about there's no something or other rather than actual evidence.
If there is a direct eyewitness account written by an eyewitness, tell me what it is.
No, I've told you what we have. We have these accurate records.
That's a speculation that they're accurate.
We have records from within...
You have records, but you can't 30, say that they're accurate. That's speculation.
We have records
we
written.
We don't know who wrote them. They're written anonymously. The attribution was given by Papias. We don't know when they were written. We can, you know, make some judgments, but
we do know when they were written. We have very good evidence for when they were written that ancient historians agree upon.
Well, they don't.
Within ranges of error.
Within range, that's right. And there are at least
small ranges of error.
There are at least several decades to, you said 30 years. Do you agree with Mark and priority?
I'm not even going to make a comment on that one because I'm not an ancient historian who has a background in the Gospel of Mark.
Well, most historians and scholars, as I understand it, you know, agree with the two source hypothesis, and they agree with Mark and Priority, although there is some debate. So, but the Gospels are written anonymously. Attribution to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John was given by Papias around about 150 CE, so many decades after they were written, quite potentially, and certainly, you know, over a century after the events occurred. But we don't even have a copy of Papias. We don't have Papias' own writings. We were told Papias wrote that by Eusebius, who was writing in the middle of the 4th century. So at very best, in terms of accuracy, we have a guy in the 4th century who tells us that a guy who lived in the middle of the 2nd century said people told him that the author of, let's say, Mark, was a guy who knew a guy, Peter, who said that these were the events that happened. Because Mark wasn't, you know, even Papias says that the author of Mark wasn't an eyewitness to the events. I mean, that from where I sit, that's kind of very, very shaky ground.
That's very clever rhetorically. What you just did then is to distance the whole discussion way, way down the centuries. But no actual historians would do it that way. And I would urge your listeners to read books by John Dixon, my colleague, on this question, because you've just taken the most skeptical and cynical position possible on what is actually accepted by historians, both believers and not believers, about the core of the historical message of Jesus. You've just gone for the absolute out on a limb version of interpreting the data, which is not accepted by pretty much everyone in the field, apart from a few popular authors like Robert Price.
Okay, but you're not disagreeing with the facts that I put forward then?
I'm disagreeing totally with the rhetoric of what you've done in the discussion there.
You're not disagreeing with the facts. You're disagreeing with the interpretation of the facts, but not with the facts.
I'm disagreeing with the value that you give to the historical data, which is much higher for everyone else outside of the field. Within the field. Saying you're taking a philosophical, almost an apologist stance on the data to make it very unbelievable, rather than accepting what actual historians say about it.
But even if historians accept it to be true, if they accept, for example, that Papias's suggestion that the book was written by Mark, for example, that's speculation. There's no evidence that I'm aware of that Papias put forward that he knew it was. He didn't know Mark personally. It was tradition in early Christian circles it was written by Mark, but we have no evidence for that. That's purely speculation. Then we have to accept that the guy that Mark really knew Peter, and that is speculation. And then we have to agree that what Peter told Mark was an accurate account of the events that happened many decades previously, which is also speculation. There's just lots of speculation involved and very little, if any, hard data to back these theories up.
Do you give the letters of Paul any historical value? All you said is a bit related to the Gospels. The letters of Paul come even earlier than the Gospels for all the historians who do the work on this.
My understanding is that the earliest writings that we have from the Christian community, the early Christian community, is the letters of Paul. My understanding from all the Christian scholars, biblical scholars that I've spoken to, is that there is some doubt over the authenticity of some of them, but two-thirds of them are thought to be authentic. But, of course, Paul wasn't an eyewitness, doesn't claim to have been an eyewitness. He wasn't there. He didn't see anything that Jesus did. And it doesn't really help in terms of eyewitness.
So this is your absolute case for Christianity is if you can't find an eyewitness who wrote down what they said and it's been transferred through the ages, then there's nothing to base it on. Is that your conclusion?
Nothing. No, not nothing. But what I'm saying is we have to be clear that there aren't any direct eyewitness accounts. So we are basing a hell of a lot, particularly because Christianity is all built around the accuracy of his words and deeds and the resurrection. The fact that we don't have a single eyewitness or contemporary account, you're basing a lot on stories that were passed down by, you know, people who were admittedly religious zealots in the Middle East in the first century CE.
So that is your one prop, really, for your skepticism is you don't have eyewitness accounts, whereas actually what you have is a incredibly well-received tradition of Jesus' teachings from within a couple of years after the events of his death and his recorded crucifixion. Yeah, the creed in 1 Corinthians 15 is dated within a few years of the time of Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. So not the whole letter, but the part of the creed in 1 Corinthians 15:3-8 that expresses the basics of Christian belief, that Jesus died, that he rose again after 3 days, that he appeared to people, that he was buried in the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea. These things are traced right back to within a couple of years of the time of Jesus. So I think this one criteria of the written records of the eyewitness is a very unusual single pillar to be basing your skepticism on, because it means the rest of the historical tradition isn't getting, in my view, its kind of fair value.
Well, I think we have to definitely take into account the historical tradition. I'm not saying we ignore it totally. Well, I guess my point is that most people I speak to, again, Christian and non-Christian, believe that the Gospels are direct eyewitness accounts. And in fact, most Christians that I have this discussion with are shocked, absolutely shocked, when they realize that they're not direct eyewitness accounts and that the authorship of the Gospels is anonymous. So I guess getting back to your press release, we were talking about biblical literacy. I suspect the more that people know about the Bible, the more that they read it and the more that they study it, they would probably become more skeptical about the events and not less skeptical.
Well, I hope as they study it that they will actually read the mainstream history rather than the incredibly on-the-edge skeptical writings that seem to get most media. That's why we've done this documentary on the life of Jesus, trying to take a fairly mainstream historical approach, because I think sometimes the things that are newsworthy and the things that get onto the shelves of Dimmicks and so other places are the most outrageous theses, the ones that are not in the centre of the discussion at all.
But Greg, when you're claiming that a guy rose from the dead and rose other people from the dead and walked on water and was born of a virgin, aren't they the extreme out there theories that should be verified with some evidence? And considering we don't have a single eyewitness account, they should be, by any rational person, treated skeptically.
I think it's right. It's right to have to approach any of these kinds of things with some suspicion. Although most people, at most times, in most places in history, have had no problem at all with life containing a supernatural dimension. And now our stats in the survey actually bear that out. That it's still the case that people actually can call themselves born again Christians, but still believe Jesus had divine powers. So, you know, there's a group of people who are incredibly skeptical. I would say probably too skeptical, having drawn too deeply from the well of David Hume on things like the supernatural. But I agree with you that we need to look at these things closely and carefully, and the story of Jesus does make big claims upon people, so you would be crazy not to do that careful looking. But it does worry me that people who are naturally skeptical in their makeup knee-jerk quickly to a position where they're only going to find the holes that they can find rather than taking seriously the whole picture.
I'll let you have the last say. Thank you, Dr. Greg.
You're a good man.
For coming on the show. Appreciate your time.
Great to chat to you.
So there you have it. Interesting stuff. You know, do I really believe that Jesus didn't exist? I have my doubts, I have to say. As I said in the show, I don't have evidence one way or the other as far as I'm concerned. The fact that a bunch of religious zealots living in and around the Middle East in the, you know, first century, second century CE believe that Jesus existed, to me, isn't a great deal of evidence to go by. I mean, we know, anyone who reads ancient history knows that people around that time in that part of the world, as in every other part of the world, believed all sorts of things. As today, people believe all sorts of things. You know, I know people who believe in UFOs and energy bodies, again, with no evidence. So just the fact that people believed it to be true, to me, is really very, very skinny evidence. You know, and particularly, we're talking about a bunch of people in a part of the world that has a long history of believing in magic men and mysticism and all sorts of crazy stories. So with a complete lack of direct evidence, first-hand eyewitness accounts, contemporary accounts by people who may not have seen it but wrote during his time that these things were going on, The Almost Complete Silence by people who were living in that part of the world, historians and scholars at the time, and there's a long, long list of them, that wrote about the plight of the Jews and things that were happening inside of Rome at the time that don't mention Jesus at all. It's what they call the argument from silence. And again, as I said to Greg, one of the things you'll hear from people when you get into this subject is they'll say, well, you know, we don't have direct evidence that a lot of people lived in ancient history. And that is true. I guess the big problem in terms of determining the historicity of Jesus is that the claims that are made about Jesus are so fantastic in the first place, rising from the dead, rising other people from the dead, healing the sick miraculously, the bread and the loaves and the fishes and walking on water and the virgin birth and all these kinds of things, that as soon as you hear extraordinary claims of supernatural activity, if you're a rational thinking person, I think you need to have a degree of skepticism about that, and you need to say, well, where's the evidence? And, for most people who lived in ancient history, those sorts of fantastic claims aren't made, although with some of the early Roman emperors, they certainly are to different degrees. You need to start asking for evidence. And in the case of Jesus, as I think is pretty clear from my discussion with Greg, in that he wasn't able to dispute any of the facts that I put forward to him, there is not a single eyewitness account, first-hand eyewitness account, not a single contemporary account. All we have is a record of stories that were passed on person to person to person over 300-400 years that Christians choose to believe were an accurate retelling of the facts, but it's pure speculation. There's just no evidence to back that up at all, as far as I'm aware. There's not a single shred of evidence to support the theory that those are accurate records of what happened. That's Cameron. Happy Vernini Day. If you want to know more about Vernini Day, you want to support it, find the link on the show notes for the blog. I've got a thing set up in Facebook. I think there's four of us signed up for it at the moment, so you could be the fifth. But it'll be a slow burn. It'll be a slow burn. 50 years from now, it'll be big. Trust me. Have a good one, folks.